Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. The big sporting story breaking over the last 24 hours in England, the fact that Timo Werner looks like he's on his way to Chelsea. Of course, for much of this summer, we thought that, in fact, Liverpool would be his destination, but it looks like he will be heading to Stamford Bridge. It's a story that dominates all the back pages in the UK as we welcome in Frank Leboeuf, Julien Laurent and Craig Burley. Craig, proper signing for Chelsea.
Yeah, magnificent signing if it happens. You know, fits, ticks all the boxes. You know, he's got some over 30 goals this season. It was over 20 last season and the season before. So the consistency's there, the flexibility's there, the work rate's there, the pace is there. He can play off the left where he has quite a lot. He can play through the middle. And of course, he's a goal scorer. On top of that, he's 24, Dan. And I think that was the big thing. We talked about Chelsea's potential interest a few days ago, and Aubameyang from Arsenal, who's an excellent player, but he's 31. And I think Lampard and Chelsea have been trying to go down the route of younger players and quality players who may have a sell on at some point. So this ticks all the boxes for Chelsea if they can get it done. A magnificent signing.
Do you agree, Frank?
I do agree. He's a fantastic player. We've seen it. We've seen him for the past 2 years, and it's a very good catch for Chelsea because he almost signed for Bayern Munich last year. We talked about Liverpool a couple of months ago, and now he's finally, fortunately, he's going to go to Chelsea, and I'm very happy about that. And he's going to give versatility in the attack in the front line as a striker with Tammy Abraham. Because Tammy Abraham is more somebody who's going to hold the ball. But when Werner's going to play, he's going to give something else to the midfielders and to the defense as well. So it's very good catch. I'm very happy. I want to see that with Ziyech on the right side, maybe Pulisic on the left side. I mean, that's going to be very, very interesting. I think it's a very, very good signing, yeah.
And quite the coup for Chelsea, as I mentioned, Jules. We just assumed that Liverpool would be where he would be heading. However, they came in, they activated this release clause, and they just seemed to get it done quick.
Yes, quick. That's the whole benefit of having release clause in a contract, is that if you show the money, then the player is yours if he accepts to join your club. I mean, I think Timo Werner is a 100 million euro player, and Chelsea got him for 60 million, which I think is an absolute bargain for, like the boys have said, his age, his talent, his versatility, his work rate, everything. 60 million euros is fantastic. And let's be clear here. He had decided to go to Liverpool. He has spoken to Klopp a few times. The problem is that Liverpool didn't have the money. They could not spend the 60 million euros on him. RB Leipzig wanted to sell. Werner was getting a bit touchy as well about what are Liverpool doing, why have they not made a bid yet. And then when Chelsea came, he said yes, he had already met Peter Cech, who did a wonderful job in this whole story, and Frank Lampard a bit earlier in the season. And I think that when he last spoke to Lampard, Lampard convinced him that that was a good project for him as well. And I really think it is. If you look at the youth in that squad, the talent in that squad, I think it makes a lot of sense for him as well.
Why didn't Liverpool have the money, Jules?
It's interesting. I think the pandemic has hit them hard. And let's not forget that that was a club who followed their staff. They did a U-turn and they changed their mind. But initially, they were ready to furlough the whole not playing staff, which shows you that the money was clearly an issue at that time. It's a club that spent a lot of money in recent years to get the squad that they have now and to dominate English football. Yes, there were the sales of Coutinho and Luis Suarez, but they still spend a lot of money on Alisson, on Van Dijk, and many others to make the squad like it is now. And I think maybe they didn't think, with the front line that they currently have, that it was worth the money, if you want, to go for a fourth choice, in a way, because that's what Werner, at least at the beginning, would have been. He would have been a replacement for one of the top three. And maybe for that amount of money, they just didn't think that it was worth it, and that they maybe are going to target someone a bit cheaper.
I think that's the point here Jules makes. And I think Liverpool clearly have the money. But it was a as good as Timo Werner is, and I think he's a brilliant player, he was a non-essential player for Liverpool for the reasons Jules just touched on. So therefore, with the financial restrictions and financial hit that clubs have taken, they're only going to spend big money if they absolutely need to. Now, Chelsea's need was more, because Tammy Abraham has done a fantastic job, but he's not a German international. He hasn't got the quality and flexibility that Timo Werner brings. And so he was an essential signing for Chelsea, and I think that's why they've pushed the boat out. Abramovich has said, OK, we'll pay the release clause because we need this player. We want to get back to the top, and he's essential for us. he wasn't essential for Liverpool, and I think that is a smart business move from them. Maybe not a smart football move, but a smart business move.
If I can say something about that, I think it's very ashamed. It's very shameful what we see, because Timo Werner almost signed for Bayern Munich, then there was a turn of events and he didn't. Klopp went to discuss twice to Timo Werner to say, we want you, we really want you. So Timo Werner talked and said, okay, I want to come to Liverpool. Now he's going to sign for Chelsea. What the fans going to think about that move, that turns of events made him almost going compulsory to Chelsea, where he wanted to go to Liverpool. And that's shameful in a way that Liverpool, they didn't need him clearly. Why is he started the discussion? Why they started to block him to finally say, oh, do you know what? Nah, we don't want you anymore. That's not very a gentleman gesture, I would say.
Isn't that just football, though, Frank?
Yeah, it's business, but we talk about human being as well. And I never thought that Liverpool was that kind of club, that you want to block somebody before the others to get him and say that at the end, I don't want you. Is that fair? Is that normal? Especially
if you put somebody... That's not true.
Well, see, what, according to what you said, yes.
But no, it's not.
According to what
Liverpool,
you said, sorry, Jules, I'm very sorry.
We're keen.
According to what you said, that Liverpool wanted him, clearly, they discussed twice to say, oh, you know, in fact, financially, we can't do it. But as Craig just said after, well, they had the money, but they did not want him because it was a forced choice. And at the end of the day, they decided that it wasn't really too much money for a forced choice. So that's just a turn of event, a turn of reflection, a turn of thought, and that's not fair for the players. That's just what I'm saying.
But I don't think it was too much money post-pandemic, but I think, pre-pandemic, but post-pandemic, I think they've decided it's not a smart business move. This global pandemic has shifted the focus slightly, well, a lot for a lot of clubs, Frank, and whilst in good faith, before all this kicked off, the financial hit that people have taken now has changed their route slightly in terms of where they want to go.
Speaking of Chelsea overall, Jules, the rhetoric was Roman Abramovich is bored, he's a bit disenfranchised with our whole system, doesn't like the UK anymore. That's kind of taken a massive U-turn, hasn't it? Not just this summer, of course, spent the money on Kepa as well. That narrative's kind of dead now.
Yeah, it's a bit... I mean, it's just the way you run a football club is, you know, every season could be different. He invested a lot at the beginning. He kept investing. Maybe there was a dip at some point. And now maybe he's thinking this is a good time for us. This is a good time because we've got a very talented and young squad with players with great future. If you look now with Werner at 24 and all the players below 24, it's outstanding the talent that this Chelsea squad has. He thinks that maybe Lampard is there for a legacy. He can stay 15 years easily, 10, 15 years at this club. So maybe Abramovich is thinking, do you know what? This is the right time. Financial fair play will ease off, and we will know that very soon because of the pandemic. So if there's one summer if you have the money when you can invest it, it's now. Clearly, also because there will be good deals to do with players maybe being sold under the value that they really have. And maybe he's thinking, do you know what? The others might not be able right now to find money to spend big. We can. So let's go and get a left back like Chilwell or like Tagliafico. Let's go and sign another forward like Werner. 60 million, as we said, it's a bargain for someone like Werner. Let's go and buy maybe a centre back. I don't know, because they will have the money to do that. A goalkeeper, similar thing. And maybe Abramovich and Marina Granovskaya as well. They're very intelligent people. They exactly know when to invest, when they can, and when maybe it's a bit more difficult. And clearly right now, they're thinking that it's a very good time for them to invest, and I think they're right.
Hakim Ziyech, of course, will be joining as well for the start of new season. Big boy time then, isn't it, Craig, for Frank Lampard? First season, of course, was given a bit of a pass, won a lot of critics over because they couldn't transfer, they couldn't sign anyone because of the ban. Now you've got new, proper players coming in. It's time to see whether or not you're up for it.
Yeah, and I think he is, and I think he showed enough last year to suggest that the players are responding to what he wants. And clearly now there is some confidence from the ownership, because owners don't spend money under managers that they're not confident in. And also, you know, the likes of Abraham, Mount, Tomori, Reece James all got good game time last year and a lot of experience under the wing. So that's a big bonus for him as well. But it does bring its pressures. I once knew a manager who didn't want to spend any money back in Scotland because he felt spending money was putting him under more pressure. But unfortunately, in the Premier League, you're going to have to spend to compete in that league, to compete in the Champions League. The other signing we talked about there, Ben Chilwell, I really like him. Really, really liked him. I looked at clubs in England that were looking for that might need a left back. I thought Man City, who have got fullbacks but have had a problem in that area, might go for him. If Chelsea can get Ben Chilwell, that would be a huge signing as well, because he's got unbelievable pace to get up and down that wing. When Lampard likes to play Alonso, it's in the back three. He doesn't like him as a fullback. He has to play Azpilicueta there, but he's a right footer. Ben Chilwell will give him great balance down that left hand side. And if he can get those two signings on top of all the other players we've mentioned, Chelsea will be in the mix next season. There's not a doubt about it from me.
How close are they to Chilwell, Jules?
He's very expensive, that's the only thing. And Leicester are quite tough at times to deal with when it comes to transfers. And we saw that last summer with Harry Maguire. I was told that they value Chilwell pretty much the same amount than Maguire. So we're getting close to £80 million, which is a lot of money for any fullbacks right now. So that may be the issue where they are priced out. Or not priced out, but in the sense that they don't want to put that kind of money on a left back when they have other options like Tagliafico, like Alex Telles as well, who are also very good players. Maybe not to the level of Chilwell because he knows the Premier League so well and is so established here. But if the money, if the price that Leicester is asking for Chilwell is too high, I'm pretty sure that Chelsea won't go there either. They're not going to be stupid and just throw the money if they don't think the player is worth it. But Chilwell would be fantastic in that back four without a doubt.
Chelsea, possible title contenders next season, Frank?
Well, we'll see. You need players to adapt. Ziyech, Werner, if it comes. No doubt that Chilwell will have a quicker adaptation, but they have a future. I don't know if it'll be next year, maybe the year after. I don't know if people are going to be patient with Lampard. I think it will be a bigger pressure for next season, but who knows where the world is going to be and where the world is going to go and where football is going to go, but definitely they will have a better squad. And in any position. So they should do better, yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. The latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast is available to listen to now. Gab and Jules joined by the one and only Frank LaBeouf.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers. Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
A big blow today for Borussia Mönchengladbach's hopes of qualifying for the Champions League. They were taking on a struggling Freiburg side, but it was the hosts that took all 3 points. Pedersen with the only goal in the second half, leading Gladbach still in fourth. Bayer Leverkusen with the chance to go above them, of course. However, that is a big ask for them, considering they're in action tomorrow against the defending champions. They'll take on Bayern Munich in a number of matches tomorrow, including Dortmund and Leipzig both in action. But let's focus, shall we, on Bayer Leverkusen against Bayern Munich. Thomas Müller, speaking ahead of the game, was asked about the prospect of one day playing in the same side as Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, we in Bayern, we have Robert Lewandowski. You know, Robert Lewandowski. And I think maybe right now he's the better option than Cristiano.
Frank LaBeouf still with us. Let's welcome Gab Marcotti to the show as well. Right then, boys, here we go. Who are you picking? Their form right now for your side until the end of the season, Cristiano Ronaldo or Lewandowski, Frank?
Wow. I go for Lewandowski. he has a future because Ronaldo is still he's still a fantastic player, but he's getting aged. I think Lewandowski has reached a fantastic level. Of course, Ronaldo is one of the best players in the world, maybe the best player in the world with Messi, and there is no doubt that at his prime he was better than Lewandowski. But you have to consider everything, and right now, if you're asking me the question right now, I go for Lewandowski, yeah.
Gab?
Well, first of all, props to Thomas Muller for his German humor. Lewandowski. I thought it was hilarious. I think from a team perspective, I think obviously a center forward, a genuine center forward, is more of a commodity than a player who is on the wing and cuts inside and is of a certain age. That said, when you look at the whole package, when you look at the supporting cast, Lewandowski also has, supplying him with chances, which I think certainly is better than Juventus' midfield, for example. I would still lean towards Cristiano, but only marginally.
He says you're speaking nonsense, then, Frank.
Well, everybody has the right to choose whoever he supports. And again, I said that Ronaldo is a fantastic player. And of course, and Gabby is interesting what he just said. Said it depends on the support that you have. I'm not sure Lewandowski would do as much as he does if he was playing for Augsburg or, I don't know, Paderborn. Of course, that's part of the plan. Ronaldo, at the time, was able to create his own goals and his own chances. Now it's different. He was very smart to think that he had to go a bit more central and be served by the others. But again, it's an age difference will make me choose Lewandowski more than the quality of the two players.
Meanwhile, Wesley Schneider was asked about his career. I could have become just as good as Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, but I didn't feel much for it. I love to drink a glass of wine here and there. Leo and Cristiano are different. They sacrificed everything. That's fine. My career was still great. Very honest from Schneider, Frank.
Well, if Thomas Müller was funny before, I think that's even funnier. Really, I would have loved to become Franz Beckenbauer or Franco Baresi, but I prefer drank some wine. Really, what kind of comment is that? I don't know. The others can do comments like that for you, but you cannot classify yourself as a certain level. At a certain level, the others can do is say, "Well, Schneider, he would have been a bit more serious. I'm sure he would have been as good as Ronaldo and Messi," but he cannot say himself that kind of comment. That's kind of vain, and people are going to smash him like I'm just doing right now. Because no, I don't think you would have been, because you showed your talent, but we saw the talent of Messi and Ronaldo, and he was much better.
But is that arrogance not making the player that he is anyway, Frank? To have that self-belief, isn't that just part of being a top-class sportsman?
Yeah, but when you are at the end of your career and when you retired, you have to show a little bit of, I don't know, how do you say that? Self-concern, when you have to make sure that, in fact, you thought about what you're going to say and you don't just say crazy things. I think it's just crazy what you just said. Because he has the talent, he had respect from everybody, he had a good career, but he's not Ronaldo and Messi. So he doesn't need to play anything. He's not a football player anymore.
Gap?
All right, first of all, I absolutely love Wesley Schneider. He's a hero of Inter's treble. He should have won the Ballon d'Or in 2010. Now, that said, no, Wesley, it's not just a question of the fact that you didn't have the work ethic that Messi and Cristiano had, and then maybe, you know, you weren't as motivated or as obsessed with success as Messi and Cristiano had. Messi and Cristiano were, and indeed are, today. There's another big difference, which is simply that those guys are far better athletes than Wesley Schneider was. Even peak Wesley Schneider, even when Wesley Schneider was working hard, which admittedly wasn't necessarily as often as the other two, he simply didn't have the strength, he didn't have the quickness that the other two have had in their prime and in many ways still have today. So there's a whole athletic component to this. And that's even before we get into the issue of technical ability, where obviously Snyder technique was his thing. But again, I think Cristiano and Lionel Messi on another level to Wesley Snyder, even Wesley on a great day.
Go and have some wine, boys, but be back for extra time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel today. Gab and Frank answering your questions. Alexis Nunez spoke to Adrian Mariapa. They covered a number of topics in today's interview, including the protesters we've seen around the world after the tragic death of George Floyd.
What do you make of the fact that now the football world, we've seen like Jadon Sancho, Weston McKennie, a couple of the players in the Bundesliga, Premier League players here and clubs actively taking a stance against it. Do you feel like now there's some more togetherness in this battle, or do you still feel that there's still a long way to go?
I could definitely see, you know, there's a lot more unity in this battle, and it is something that, you know, we've... In the UK, although in, you know, it's not the States, you see how the UK people and how we're standing up together, you know, with everyone in the States who are protesting. There's protesters in England, in London, all across England, actually, and other places in Europe as well. And I think it's a worldwide issue. You know, there are a lot of similarities in the UK that mirror the States, and that's why, you know, when... You know, the tragic murder of George Floyd come out and everyone's seen the videos, you know, it's, you know, it hurts, you feel it. You know, as a black person, the incidents that you've had in your life, and, you know, it comes back to you and it hurts, you know. And I think, you know, now is the time for us to come together and fight together, for, you know, cause the stuff my dad told me growing up, you know, you're gonna have to work twice as hard, you know, to get to the same place as your white, you know, your white friends, is conversations I'm having with my kids now. And I don't want that for them. You know, I want it to be a level playing field. I want them to have the same opportunities growing up, you know, and to be rewarded for their hard work. And the only way that that's going to happen is, you know, by showing unity and coming together. And I think it's brilliant that a lot of, you know, players and sports people and celebrities and, you know, just everyone just coming together.
And with that coming together, I know finally just one of the things that was pointed out was that at least now something that's different is people see more white people actively speaking out about this, or finally getting comfortable enough to speak out about this and actually join the fight. Is that something that you think was missing and that we probably need more of?
Yeah, for sure. And I understand that maybe it is uncomfortable at first. It's uncomfortable to have those conversations, but they're conversations that need to be had, because, you know, this is a daily reality for black people all over the world, you know, that the daily injustices that you're fighting against, and it needs, you know, backing by everyone. So, like I said, it may be uncomfortable, you know, you may not want to speak out about it, but, there's always something you can do. So, as long as you're willing to take action, you know, and support, then I'm all for it.
Well, we now know after the schedule was released today that Mariapa's first game for Watford, the return after the break, will be at home against Leicester. That's one of four matches on the Saturday. It all kicks off, though, with Aston Villa against Sheffield United. Manchester City against Arsenal, certainly a standout tie of that day. That's followed by Spurs against Manchester United. All of these games are staggered, by the way, so you could watch them back-to-back pretty much. And then you go ahead to Newcastle against Sheffield United, Villa against Chelsea, and then the Merseyside derby, Everton against Liverpool. And to wrap up the action, it's Manchester City against Burnley.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa.
Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Italian football, of course, back with a bang next week. This time, next week, we'll see the first of the second leg of those Coppa Italia semi-finals. Juventus taking on Milan. That one finally poised at 1-1. 24 hours after that, it's Napoli against Inter. Napoli with a slim 1-0 advantage going into that second leg. But, Gab, concerns again maybe that we won't be able to complete the Italian season overall because suggestions, once again, that if one player is tested positive for the coronavirus, then the whole team will have to go into quarantine, which will surely affect the conclusion of this season.
Yeah, I mean, look, Dan, this is why they were talking about having a plan B in place. You know, what happens if there is another outbreak? How do we, and we have to shut down, because obviously if several teams have to quarantine for 2 weeks, then that's going to wreak havoc with the fixture list. Now, that said, they feel pretty confident about the possibility that this won't happen. Part of it is down to the intensity of the testing. Part of it is down to the fact that Italy as a country, since June 3rd, are now in a different phase of lockdown. There's no more than a couple hundred positive tests a day. So, and that's out of a testing regimen of in the sort of order of 70, 80,000 a day. There's 9 of the 20 regions had zero tests, overall. So they're pretty confident that this has been an ongoing trend, and that by the time that they actually start playing again, which is obviously going to be on the 20th of June, in terms of actual Serie A coming back, there could be further relaxation in the rules to the point that they could start approaching this differently. But for now, the advice is evident. Because they have contact tracing, anybody who tests positive, people who came in contact with them, will have to be monitored and may have to quarantine. But they're hoping that by the end of June, that will change the sort of system that they have in Germany and Spain, where it's only going to be the individual who is asked to self-quarantine.
Meanwhile, Gab, for those who haven't been able to read your article yet over on ESPN FC regarding Manchester City and their appeal against that 2-year ban from the Champions League, just kind of sketch out a timeline for us.
I wish I could, Dan. The timeline is that beginning on Monday over the next 3 days, but you know it could also begin on Tuesday, Manchester City's appeal against their ban from UEFA, which of course is 2 seasons from European competition and a fine of 30 million euros, around about $35 million, for obvious breaches of financial fair play and lack of cooperation with the investigation. CAS is going to go and hear the case from both sides. CAS is kind of like the Supreme Court when it comes to sports. You've got 3 judges, one chosen by the court, one chosen by the plaintiff, and one chosen by the defendant. The big question is, how quickly will they deliver a verdict? UEFA hope, and I think City hope as well, that it's going to come relatively quickly so that both sides can figure out the next move if necessary. Some suggestions that it could come in at some point in July. I think potentially it could come by the end of June. But you know what? It's really complicated. It's really tough to say because this is a very, very complicated issue filled with lots of boring, to many, accounting protocols and whatnot. So objectively, I think it's difficult to say. Hopefully by the end of June.
Gab Moncalieff, thank you very much. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. We'll, of course, be reflecting on that big game in Germany as Bayer Leverkusen play host to Bayern Munich. That's just one of 5 matches tomorrow in the Bundesliga, including Leipzig against Paderborn. Then you've got the late match as well, Borussia Dortmund against Hertha Berlin. No domestic action, well, from the league midweek. However, we're at the semi-final stages now of the German Cup. Both games live, back-to-back. You've got Saarbrücken against Bayer Leverkusen. That is on the Tuesday, live on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and ESPN3. And then on Wednesday, Bayern Munich against Eintracht Frankfurt. Once again, available on all those channels as well. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned. Extra time with Gavin Frank. Welcome into Extra Time. Frank LaBeouf and Gab Marcotti with me to answer some of your questions. Who was the better player in their prime, Gab? De Rossi or Gattuso?
Ooh. I'm going to go with, much as I love Ringo Gattuso, I got to go with DDR here. Daniele De Rossi was also, first of all, he had goals in him. He was a tremendous header of the ball, as well as obviously being able to put the boot in defensively. I think he was also a much better passer than Rino Gattuso was. Now, if you're talking about drive and midfield, I think it's pretty much even. But total package, I would have to go with De Rossi.
Frank?
Yes, I agree with Gabby. I saw them playing many, many times. I have had the chance to play one game against De Rossi for a tribute for Vincent Candela in Roma, and I had the chance to have his shirt, and I really like the guy. I mean, I like the whole package, the way he was playing, but the way he was behaving, more than Gattuso. Gattuso was a rebel where I think Daniele De Rossi was a hard guy, but he was a lover of football, and I liked the spirit of the guy.
Do you have a lot of shirts, Frank?
I do, but I gave it to the chairman. Well, I loaned it to the chairman of Stade de Reims, who has a museum, and I gave him like 15 shirts to put him in the museum because they are in my cupboard and they're useless. So he wanted them. So now you can see them in the museum in Reims.
What's your prize?
Champagne.
What's your prize procession? Your prize shirt swap.
Well, obviously you have the World Cup final shirt, but I have the 100th century shirt Barcelona from Rivaldo and the same from Guardiola. I've got Zidane shirt. I've got the 100 cap from Didier Deschamps shirt.
Yeah.
I've got so many others as well. Yeah. I've got Vieira, Petit, Wiltord from Arsenal as well. So yeah. I have nice shirts.
Yeah, what have you got, Gab?
I certainly can't compete with that in terms of shirt collections. I have an autograph Ronaldo shirt which somebody gave me as a gift, but overall, this is going to sound incredibly boring, I don't collect original shirts because guess what, I cover these people, so I don't want to, it really wouldn't be fair if you go and you have to go and write mean things about somebody or give harsh opinions and then you've got their shirt up on the wall. Not really my thing.
For Frank, your best Chelsea teammate other than Gianfranco Zola?
That would be Mark Hughes. Really, for me, when we were under pressure, because I could reach him and he was able to keep the ball for ages and allowing me to put my defense up and all the block up. And we always talk with Craig about him, saying that he was the worst player for training session during the week, but always almost the best when we had the game on Saturday. Fantastic guy, fantastic warrior, fantastic player. I mean, what he did for Manchester United and for Chelsea was absolutely spot on. I mean, I loved him, yeah.
If Gab or Frank, let's go with Gab first, were advising Koulibaly, where would you suggest he should make his next move, Gab?
Oh.
Ooh. That's a good question. I think Koulibaly is one of the top three defenders in the world. I think he's not just a phenomenal athlete. He's really, really smart as well. I think he reads the game very, very well, and he's made a ton of progress over the last 5 or 6 years. So he can write his own ticket, I think, in some ways. I might suggest that, I don't know what my options are here in terms of where he would go, but I know he's been linked to Liverpool. But I might actually suggest a club like Manchester United. I think he would be a really, really good fit alongside Harry Maguire. So that might be something to consider, just simply because I think their skill sets complement they will complement each other very, very well.
Why would you tell him to go to a club that isn't even in the Champions League, isn't even competing for titles, Gab?
Why would I do that? Because it's the theater of dreams. It's the thing about, look, I mean, you're asking me where he'd be a good fit. I mean, look, the reality is...
You're asking... He's running up and said, Gab, I can go anywhere in the world. Where should I go?
City.
Go
Come
to
on.
Manchester United.
Okay, all right. Then go to a really good team and go and win something as a passenger. Why don't you go to Liverpool? They already won without you. Then you can come along and say, hey, look, I won with me too. Sometimes it's nice to build things rather than to go and come in on the last day and reap the benefits of everybody else's work.
Frank?
I would never ask him to go to Manchester United for many reasons, because I want him to win some stuff, and I think Manchester United is not the club that they used to be, and they're not ready to win stuff. I think Liverpool will be a good fit with Van Dijk. That would be fantastic. Paris Saint-Germain as well with, Marquinhos. That would be two great central defenders. I think Chelsea will need a player like that. I don't know if Koulibaly would be interested, but even if they have two very good central defenders, Koulibaly, I think, belong to another level and will fit very well. But definitely, I know he has a link with Liverpool. Van Dijk and Koulibaly at the back. My God, that's going to be another red season, I guess.
Yeah, but Frank, Liverpool have already won things. Where's the fun in that for Koulibaly, going and winning more things?
I don't know, you have to make a choice, you know, at a certain point. You know, the question was, what was the best fit for Koulibaly? Which player he could play his best football? And definitely with Van Dijk. And when you're a defender like Koulibaly, that would be the best central defense in the world.
Okay, I have two questions and would like your thoughts on them. How do you view the future of AC Milan with Maldini leaving and replaced by German Ralf Rangnick, Gab?
I mean, look, obviously Maldini's a resident icon, but I think you look at what came before, you look at some of the choices that were made, and you look at the fact that the club have a very clear direction in which they want to go. And, you know, if Maldini's not going to be part of it, then I think it's best to start over. I think they've said that, you know, they're going to try to be clever about their signings. They're going to push youth. They're going to look for value. I think you saw that already with players like Theo Hernandez, like Bennacer, both of whom came in the summer. I think that is the reality of this club right now, of where they are, given all the mistakes that were made before, given all the bad contracts that they inherited from before. So I think what's going to be important is, if you stick with a guy, if you bring in a guy like Rangnick, giving him the support, but then you have to stick to the plan. And I felt that, you know, while Maldini was there, a lot of decisions were kind of, I don't know, maybe made on gut feel or whatever. Ultimately, the decision to bring in Marco Giampaolo, which was absolutely disastrous, you know, that was on Maldini. That's when he was there. So if he doesn't want to be a part of it anymore, if he doesn't feel like he can be a part of it, then he shouldn't be somewhere if he doesn't feel like he's part of the project, if that makes any sense. So Milan need to move on regardless. They've chosen a path. I think it's the right path given the circumstances. Let's see how it turns out.
Second part of the question is, have you watched Sunderland Till I Die, Gab, and what can you learn from it?
Of course I've watched Sunderland Till I Die. I've watched both seasons, in fact. I thought Charlie Methven was a load of fun in the second season. I think what you're learning, on a more serious note, is that, you know, this is a club which has a Premier League set up in many ways in terms of costs and the fan base and whatever else, that simply can't live up to it. And while sometimes it's, you know, it's entertaining in a car crash way for some people, I was just kind of moved by all those guys, so all those men and women who just live for the club every week. And I just wish there was more transparency, because I remember all those owners Sunderland had over the years going and spending, I'm not talking about Ellis Short so much because, you know, obviously he paid down the debt, but all those people who came in and signed guys to enormous contracts and threw money around and whatever and says, ooh, will you back the manager and whatever, and the whole time, you know, no transparency and whatever. Now, the reality is chickens come home to roost, and it's going to be very, very difficult for Sunderland to climb back out, regardless of who's in charge. And people paying the price for it, I think, are the fans.
Great title music. That's my two pennies about that show. Who will Spurs sign this summer? Wait, I can answer that. No one. That true, Gav?
Well, look, I mean, there's no question that they would like to sign some players, but equally, I don't quite know. I need to do more reporting on it, but this statement that came out where they said that, you know, they were borrowing, $170 million, in public money because they expect losses of $200 million this year, and that money's going to be ring-fenced, so it's obviously not going to be used on players. That suggests to me that there isn't a lot of money to go around. So I think unless they manage to sell players, I don't know who they can bring in or how they're going to bring them in. I think they're just going to have to buckle down and grind it out. I mean, it would certainly look very, very bad on the club if they started throwing money around while having borrowed, like I said, £170 million in excess of $200 million of public money.
Frank, since you speak multiple languages, do you have any tips for those of us learning new languages as adults?
Watching TV with a subtitle in the original language, and reading newspapers helped me out a lot to learn English. But there is no advice that I can give for who's going to work for certain people and others. But I think being joining inside the country that you want to live in and not speaking your own language helps a lot to know better and to learn quicker.
Gab, you speak 27 languages. What advice do you have?
I totally agree with Frank. I think TV plays a huge huge part just in developing your ear to the language and also to different accents. I'm sure when Frank came over and he sort of, you know, heard that, like, you know, Scousers from Liverpool sound completely different to Geordies from the Northeast, who sound different from the Cockneys from East London. You know, that's a whole sort of difference within a single country. Back in the day, if you happen to be single, the old joke used to be, you know, get a girlfriend or boyfriend from whatever country where you want to learn a language. That can usually be a big help as well. But of course, I assume that that's not an option for some people.
Thanks, Gab. there's a phrase, but I can't say it because I get into trouble. Okay, final thing. Which cuisine is better, French or Italian? Which country has a more snobby attitude about their food and contempt for other countries' cuisine? I think we talked about this before, Gab. I think you agreed French was better, yeah?
Yes, we have had this before. I think overall, in terms of the absolute breadth of French cuisine, I think it's more sophisticated. I think in Italy we have better produce, we have better raw materials. But I mean, those are two of my favorite cuisines in the world, you know, so it comes down, I think it's going to come down to very much to personal preference. In terms of the snobbiness, I will say this. I don't view it as snobbiness. Going to a restaurant and demanding good food is something everybody should do. And every summer I drive down to Italy, I drive through France, and I know that in France, even if I rock up to sort of the crappiest little roadside brasserie, odds are I'm going to eat well because the people who live there are going to demand that whoever lives there cooks good food, properly cooked. They don't put up with garbage. They don't deal with this, oh, well, you know, like it's just fuel type thing. So hats off to France. I think people should be more snobby. People should be more demanding about their food because, hey, it's a big part of our culture.
Having said all that, Frank, you don't care about food that much, no?
Well, I like sometimes good good meal, but it's true that it's mostly for me eating to give some gas in my or petrol in my essence in my body and to live my life. But it's true that I like pastas, and you know the competition we have between Italians and French, it's like, you know, like we have a competition for everything. Who dresses the best? Who has the best country? We have the best wine. Who has the best food? We have the best women. Who has the best men? I mean, that's for over centuries has been a big competition. And I think I love the Italian cuisine. I mean, that's unbelievable. And at some point when you go to Italy, as Gabby said, for the French people, Italian, they want to eat properly as well. So it's part of our, you know, maybe competition that we developed, that we want to have a good food and we want to dress well and we want to drink well. And that's part of our culture. But it's different food. I love to go in some different district and region in France to eat choucroute or cassoulet or crepes or something else, and different wines, Bordeaux, Bourgogne, whatever it is. But I guess it's the same in Italy, and we can share good things. The only thing we cannot share is champagne, because they can't use the name. I think they say Prosecco, but champagne is very from Reims and the area of Champagne. You can't call it in any other places in the world champagne.
That's it. We're done. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Go and have some champagne, Prosecco, whatever you fancy. Have a lovely weekend. We will, though, be back here tomorrow. Be sure to join us then.